From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. John West, author of Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. John West in their conversation.
Many people know about Alfred Kinsey, but they don't understand that Alfred Kinsey was trained as an evolutionary biologist. When he wrote his influential book about sex in the human male that really helped feed the sexual revolution, he was coming at it with a Darwinian worldview, which is basically, well, if it exists somewhere in nature, it must have been favored by natural selection for that purpose. So it's all equally natural. You can't criticize it. And that really provided this scientific basis or argument that pushed a whole generation of sexologists that really set the stage ultimately for the redefinition of marriage and for the redefinition of biological sex and, you know, the denial of biological sex. And the irony is today, some of the leading Darwinian evolutionists like Colin Wright or Richard Dawkins, to their credit, have not embraced the abandonment of sex, you know, male and female, but they don't realize how their desacralizing of nature and, you know, that nature is simply this product of this blind, purposeless process, and whatever is dictated, you know, for survival, nature will choose, which means it's not chosen by anything. And they don't realize that that view leads to a view, well, why should you respect, you know, yes, we have men and women now, but if we through our technology can surmount that, why not? What's the in principle objection? Because ultimately nothing biological can be grounded in some sort of transcendent nature because there is no transcendent nature or designer. And so I have to say it's sort of a tragedy that, I wouldn't say heroes, you know, tragic figures of some of the most hardcore Darwinian evolutionists who have ushered forth a society that even some of them are horrified by now.
Yeah, I always say the redefinition of marriage, if you change the meaning of a word, like marriage, you change the thing itself. And you point out in your book that Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is a lifelong Roman Catholic Christian, holds that marriage as historically defined fosters little more than ill will and animosity. So in his considered opinion, anyone who embraces the historical definition of marriage and therefore excludes same-sex couples does so out of hate and animus. And I have written that what must surely have been self-evident to this supremely erudite arbiter of justice is that virtually every redefinition of marriage, including his own, excludes someone. But is that due to hate or is it due to common sense? If marriage means everything, in the end, it can mean nothing at all. And marriage is not a tangential issue. I mean, it's one of the pillars of civilization. It's at the very bedrock of all of civilization.
And that's what people often don't understand who are seeding ground on marriage. Then let's go along over to like poverty issues and long-term poverty. Well, once you've seeded that marriage isn't important and that traditional family isn't important, and then you're trying to talk about the problems that creates for poverty, you don't realize these are dominoes and that they, you know, you think, oh, well, what happens in the bedroom stays in the bedroom. That's not true. I mean, we know, say, in the area of poverty, that the best predictor of long-term intergenerational poverty in America, whether you're white, black, Asian, Hispanic, is whether you have an intact family, a mother and a father. And if you don't, the chances of the dysfunction of your kids, and, you know, this is nothing about those people who are forced to be, you know, in a single-parent situation who do their absolute best and some good things can come of that. But as a whole, that is not the model. And so once you seed marriage in the intact family, you create massive problems that we've seen actually in long-term intergenerational poverty and dysfunction. But the other thing you mentioned, Anthony Kennedy, that I just like to stress, and this gets back to the main point of the book, which is we are always, as Christians, you know, I find myself, you know, going against the theological liberals and things, but it's, we have to realize our own complicity in the Christian community of getting our own house in order. Anthony Kennedy was not only appointed by Ronald Reagan, he was known in his personal life as a goody-goody. He was a devout weekly mass goer, you know, part of a church, the Catholic Church, that has officially a biblical view of marriage. He was the one who was the deciding vote. Why this matters. You know, the reason we have a phony constitutional right for same-sex marriage that doesn't exist in the Constitution is not because of a, you know, someone appointed by a Democrat, not because of a loony atheist, a mask-going, goody-goody, Ronald Reagan appointed justice. He was the deciding vote. And similarly, when we talk about the, and it's not, you know, Catholics, we talked earlier about Jimmy Carter. I mean, Jimmy Carter was a devout evangelical Christian, but he is embracing in the end of his life before he died that Jesus would love gay marriage. You know, Jesus would love, I think he said, you know, anything that didn't harm someone else, I'd say gay marriage does harm people, but you know, anything, any relationship, you know, would be fine with Jesus. So there you have the nation's most prominent born-again Christian politician making that argument. And then when it comes to who's persecuting the bakers and the florists and the other people, you know, who don't want to be conscripted to support gay marriage, well, in many cases, it's people who identify as Christian. So in my home state of Washington, we had a Christian grandmother who had a longtime floral shop, and she would sell to everyone. But when it came to developing particular flower arrangements just specifically for a gay wedding, she didn't want to do that. She'd sell them flowers, but she didn't want to be a participant in that. She no longer has her floral shop. She was driven out of existence. The person who drove her out of existence was not an atheist. It was a church-going Catholic attorney general. He's now our governor, unfortunately, in my view, Bob Ferguson, who actually wrote an article at the time defending his persecution of her as part of his faith commitment. I mean, in other words, as part of being a good person of faith, a good Catholic, was driving her out of existence. Andy Stanley, who we talked about earlier, disparaged Christians business people who didn't want to participate in gay weddings. So don't think that this is just the big bad secularists who are putting this on it. It's people who self-identify as Christians. And if we don't get our own house in order, it's hard to expect better results.
And you know, it's really interesting. You get this sense in reading through your book that the slippery slope that you've been talking about in the podcast, and you'll certainly talk about in the book, is dangerous not only for civilizations, for countries, but also for individuals. And you point this out and give example after example after example of people that start down this road. And once you start down that road, you gain momentum. You give up this pristine principle, and then it's easier to give up the next one. And pretty soon you're gaining speed as you go down that slope.
That's exactly right. And especially if the culture is getting worse, and you're taking your cues from the culture, so it's sliding down, it's going to drag you down with it. And another case in my book is a pastor, former pastor, Ryan Meeks, celebrated as one of the new breed of evangelicals just a few years ago in Time magazine. Why? Well, because his congregation repented against, you know, not affirming the gay and lesbian lifestyle and actually started to do gay weddings. But he claimed to be an evangelical in doing this. Well, as I say in the book, if you check out his church today, it doesn't exist. It went out of existence. And if you actually check about its history, shortly with, you know, after that time that he was trumpeted in Time magazine as a new breed of evangelical, that church no longer even identified as specifically Jesus-oriented or Christian. I mean, but then he left altogether, and you can find his website. People go to my links. Now he doesn't call himself a Christian. I'm not even sure he's a theist, but he helps people on their journeys, including especially with psychedelic drugs. He now lives in Oregon with his wife, and so he has a whole new ministry. So yeah, if you look at the personal trajectory, a lot of the people upheld as these, you know, the new paradigm of the new teaching for Orthodox or evangelical Christians that actually is the old heresies, it doesn't end well. It's really tragic for these people. And of course, it's tragic for the people who they mislead.
Yeah, I remember his famous quip, gay or straight here. There's no hate here. But anyway, chapter 4, Rebuilding the Walls of Hostility, this is an important chapter as well, where you talk about how Stockholm Syndrome Christianity produces this divisive view of race and class. Talk about the anti-racist movement. It sounds so good, but there's a distinct problem with anti-racism.
Yeah, and here's a tragedy, again, of Christians who don't want to really defend the Bible.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. John West. In Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, John West warns that most Christians in America grow up in cultural captivity. They are immersed in an environment hostile to genuine faith. At home, school, work, and even ministry. Over the years, in an elite culture that rejects Orthodox Christianity, pastors, professors, journalists, and others can start identifying more with those who hate Christianity than with their fellow believers, becoming Stockholm Syndrome Christians. Drawing on original research and his experience as a professor and ministry leader, West pinpoints root causes and offers practical strategies to help families, churches, and communities stand firm for truth. Read this book to become part of the solution. To receive your copy of Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It, call 888-7000-CRI. And make a special fiscal year-end gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Winston Churchill once declared, "You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves." Churchill sought to awaken those who were reluctant to fight against the advancing Nazi war machine. Today, a spiritual battle is taking place. Atheism advances in the West, and slavery to secularity is imprisoning more and more hearts and minds in the United States. For this reason, CRI's ministry is critical. But we need people willing to stand for truth, along with the financial provisions to accomplish its mission. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is essentially two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God in Christ. Simply put, the map is not the territory. The menu is not the meal. We cheat ourselves of authentic union with Christ when we elevate the message above the Messiah. Truth Matters, Life Matters More is a modern classic and the magnum opus of one of the great theological minds of our time. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org.
let's rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. John West, in their conversation.
Talk about the anti-racist movement. It sounds so good, but there's a distinct problem with anti-racism.
Yeah, and here's a tragedy, again, of Christians who don't want to really defend the Bible because they, without good teaching, you know, I think the Bible is the greatest engine of human dignity and equality in the history of mankind. I mean, no question. And so if you're not willing to draw on that resource, then you basically, there's the gap. And so what has filled the gap are these so-called anti-racism, which really is just racism. But it comes back. I mean, let's go back to the Darwinian story. Darwin, again, thought human beings weren't created in the image of God. We descended with common ancestors from ape-like creatures. And then that helped fuel discussions of higher and lower races, who was more evolved than others. And that really debuted and fomented a view of scientific racism and the idea that race defines you more than, you know, your fellow religious beliefs or other beliefs. And where did that lead? Well, on the left, it led to people who basically, you know, they say they're against racism, but they imbibe this underlying structure that they actually think race or ethnicity is paramount. And so they just disagree about who the oppressor class is. So if they're being oppressed, the idea is that they should become, in essence, the oppressor. And so it's all about power. It's not about building common ground. It's not about building, you know, that all people are created equal and that we should be aspiring to equal standards and loving one another because we're all created in the image of God. It's that, no, they buy into, yeah, there are. It's all about power and these tribal groups, these racial groups. And so if we happen to be Black or Hispanic or whatever, we should identify with our own, and then we should be pushing back about, you know, anyone else as the oppressor. And the thing is, this is also, you know, I write about this a little bit in the book. It's become more pronounced since I wrote the book. But so you have that on the left. You have something that's really disturbing on the right that mimics it among secularists on the right, but also among some self-described, I don't think they're accurately described, as in the Reform view, where they basically accept this diagnosis that, yeah, it's all about race and tribalism. And they just say, well, but since we're white, we should be supreme. And so they're actual white supremacists. And the thing is, both of these ideas, which have some derivation from Darwinian evolution, are false. And the tragedy of the Christians who stood out and weren't preaching biblical equality is there was a vacuum for these noxious pseudo-Darwinian and other views to just rush in. And I think that's what we're seeing. And to go back to Andy Stanley, I think you see a microcosm of how this happens. He has a really poignant story in his book, Irresistible, about how a father came to him early in his career with his daughter, and his daughter was dating a Black man and wanted to marry him. And he wanted Andy Stanley to, you know, read the Right Act to his daughter and to tell her that, you know, in God's view, that, you know, this was an abomination because, and the example he gave is that God was irate with Moses for marrying a Black woman. Well, I mean, the clearest thing to say on that, well, first of all, is that's completely false. In fact, God was upset with Miriam and Aaron for being upset that Moses married who he married. And so it's the complete opposite. But what is Andy Stanley? How is he using this? He actually says, well, you know, I didn't really want to get into a debate over this, and, you know, that wasn't really productive. And so he you know, said something about, you know, do you want to lose your daughter or do you want to hold to your ideas? And okay, maybe pastorally that made sense in that situation. I don't know. But he uses it as an example for why we should abandon the Old Testament. He uses it as, well, see, you know, the Old Testament leads to things like racism, rather than, I mean, I would use an example of, this is why we get things like critical race theory on the left and then sort of the racialism on the fringe of the right, is because people like Andy Stanley aren't willing to give good teaching. I mean, the Bible, like I said, is an engine of human dignity and equality from Genesis to Revelation. And for a Christian pastor to not give good teaching, I mean, I'd say that the father who came to see him, the fact that father had such a distorted view of what the Bible said is an example of the, not of the Old Testament failure, but the failure of Christian preachers like Andy Stanley to actually tell them what the Bible actually says.
Yeah, and a beautiful point. And you say that the Bible has served as the greatest bulwark against racism, and the Bible has also helped people understand equality of human beings throughout human history. So this is the bulwark, and the Bible's actually being denigrated. I mean, that's the insidious nature of this.
It is. And this is yet another fruit of not being willing to defend the authority of the Bible, is now we see it in the area of race. And like I said, you see it on the left, but you also see it, these pernicious people on the right who claim to be Christians, who are themselves, if you read their works, are imbibing Darwinian evolution. They actually cite Darwinian arguments for racism. I mean, this is, it's such a tragedy, because you're right, the Bible, one reason why I think actually people should read creation stories from other religions is not because I think they're true, because they're not, but they'll begin to see just how absolutely unique the Bible's creation story is. I mean, if you read, say, the Laws of Manu, the Hindu creation story, where we don't reflect God's image, we reflect the image of different pieces of the gods. And so some people are actually in the image of the feet, and they are only meant to be slave classes. I mean, in their creation story, inequality is built in. Compare that to what the Bible teaches of male and female created in the image of God. I mean, this was a radically, I mean, we are so, because we're living in the light of this type of thinking, you know, from the Bible, people take it for granted. But if the Bible had never existed, a lot of things would be awful. But, you know, this idea of human equality, it comes from there. And then, you know, certainly Christians, when I see some right-wing Christians now saying that their ethnicity is more important, that they have more to share with, say, fellow American-born, you know, Americans of their same race than they do with Christians in Africa. Well, that's absolutely false. I mean, one of the great joys of being a Christian when I travel is being with Christians of other races, ethnicities, nationalities, and realizing how much, you know, we have that we share together. In fact, it's a tremendous thing that almost everywhere in the world you travel here, you actually have brothers and sisters. And for anyone who has traveled, and you know, I haven't traveled as much as many people, but when I have traveled, especially outside the United States, let alone in different areas of the United States, having brothers and sisters, finding a biblical church is one of the most inspiring, powerful things that could ever happen. And so, and then just the history of getting rid of slavery and the arguments against that, and some of the misconstruals of people thinking the Bible was pro-slavery. No, it's not. And, you know, I go through that in a little bit of depth in there. So I'm trying to equip people here also that when they hear these objections, to actually articulate a biblical view of equality. And it, I think, so tragic post, say, 2020. And, you know, I don't think it was tragic in 2020 that with George Floyd's death and things, that many white Christians began to think we really need to face the issues we have in our society about race and ethnicity. That was honorable. The problem is, rather than going to the Bible and going to the rich Christian tradition to teach about equality and dignity, many of them went to places like, you know, the church that I was in. You know, people wanted to read Robin DiAngelo, who's white, I mean, a white woman, White Fragility, which is not at all biblical, and it's just, it's really pernicious. And so the tragedy is so many Christian churches aped the culture rather than going to the rich Christian tradition of biblical teaching on human equality and dignity.
A couple of comments on your fifth chapter where you say we must obey men rather than God. That's the chapter title. The subtitle really points out that Stockholm Syndrome Christians abandoned religious liberty.
Yeah, and this gets to the point that, again, it's not just the big, bad, nasty atheists and secularists who are our problem. If you look, time and again, there are Christians who are facilitating a lot of the persecution, either directly, like the former Attorney General of Washington that I talked about earlier, or by refusing to talk about it, refusing to defend people, refusing to speak up for people. And so that is really sad. And I think actually, you know, during the COVID era of some of the endless lockdowns and the mandates, and this also, I think, creates some controversy, because I, on the COVID mandates, which I think were unjust, and I think that some Christians who demonize their fellow Christians were wrong. I cite examples from both parts of the political spectrum. So you had David French, who's an evangelical columnist at the New York Times, who's very anti-Trump. But then you have Robert Jeffress, conservative Trump supporter, Baptist Church in Dallas, who a lot of more conservative Christians really love. Both of them, though, demonized Christians who didn't feel that they could take the COVID vax. And I think that that is really sad and tragic.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. John West. Our unwavering mission at the Christian Research Institute is to defend and proclaim the faith once for all given to the saints and equip believers to live as genuine followers of the Lord Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your special fiscal year-end gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of the book by John West, Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, Why America's Christian Leaders Are Failing and What We Can Do About It. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. And you can also write CRI, Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. The Soviet Red Army won the Battle of Stalingrad. It appeared at first the Nazi war machine would secure the victory, but the Soviets battled back from near certain defeat with extraordinary courage and resoluteness to turn the tide of the battle and ultimately the war. The lesson is that both men and material, people and provisions played a critical role. Willingness to fight and munitions in the arsenal were pivotal. Our contemporary battle for truth against anti-Christian secularists raises the stakes above the significance of Stalingrad. CRI likewise needs military partners willing to stand for truth, along with the financial means to accomplish the mission. Stand with us during the key month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.